This is a PlanetPhilip.com podcast.
Hello and welcome to another Planet Philip podcast. With me today, I have Emo and Don. Hello, Emo.
Hello, Philip. Nice to meet you. I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Yes, I'm fine, thank you. It's been 1 year since we last spoke, which was on the 100 Summer Days of Nostalgia.
Yes. So long time has passed. I thought we'll speak once again quickly. Year. But the delay was bigger than I thought it would be.
Yes, I didn't expect it to be 1 year since we spoke. And joining us is Don. Hello, Don.
Hi, Philip. How's it going?
You're on my podcast more than I am, I think.
Planet
How
Don.
How are you, anyway?
Yeah. I'm good. I'm doing good. How are you guys?
We're both good, it seems. Now, what we're talking about today is Half-Life, and we've just finished the game, part of the Tree event, which is the replay experience experiment, which is where we replay all of the games in chronological order, and we just think about and talk about and write about how different it was this time compared to the very first time we played it. So that's really the basis of the whole Tree event. And this particular podcast is only focused on Half-Life. Okay, so that's for the listeners to make sure that they know what they're listening to. Now, what we're going to start with is we're going to start with our personal background history of Half-Life. And that was Don's suggestion, so I'm going to throw him at the deep end and say, Don, what do you remember first about Half-Life? How did you hear about it? Did you buy it immediately? Those kind of things.
I actually did buy it immediately, or you know, very close to immediately. It was certainly, I think, the first weekend after it was released, so within the first week, back in November 98. And at the time, I wasn't that much of a an FPS player. I had played demos for Doom and Quake and Quake 2, and they were okay. They just didn't really grab me because they were, you know, just more action-oriented, which was fine, but, you know, I wanted something a little deeper. I did enjoy Jedi Knight at the time, which had, of course, was Star Wars-based, had a little more story and some full-motion video cutscenes, so it wasn't obviously quite the same as Half-Life, but it had a more engaging story than the other FPSs. So there was buzz about Half-Life. You know, I remember picking up on it, say, mid-98 in the summer. It was often pitted against Sin from Ritual, I think, Entertainment, mm-hmm. who made it. They were supposed to come out, I think it may have even been the same week, but certainly in the same month before the holiday season. And a lot of people were comparing those. But when Half-Life came out, I had bought it without really knowing that much about it. I had heard a little bit of the buzz when Half-Life Day 1 came out, which was the demo of, you know, basically from the opening tram ride all the way up to just after you first reach the surface in, I think it's in We've Got Hostiles, where you have to duck back down after the soldiers are rappelling from the helicopter, which gave you a great taste of the game. But I that wasn't available to the public, really. That was included with some video cards and things like that, but it generated a lot of buzz on the internet on, oh, you guys, you know, you must buy this when it comes out. And I just ended up, you know, giving it a shot. And I wasn't one to buy many games, but I figured, what the heck? And, you know, here we are, you know, 14 years later, and we're still playing the same game. So
were you like a person who would buy the video game magazines and follow what's coming up and reviews through the magazines?
Once in a while, yeah. I didn't subscribe at the time. I actually had never subscribed to them. But if something was interesting, I would pick up, you know, maybe, I don't know, 5 episodes a year or something like that of the magazine and flip through them. And, of course, at the time, they probably still are now. But they're just chock full of advertisements. You know, there's articles too, but at least half of the magazine is advertisements for upcoming games.
Yeah, it's true. And do you remember how much you paid for it?
It was probably, I think it was on sale, but it was $45, I think.
It was on sale within the first week.
It was like, you know, 10% off or something. It wasn't like 50% off. It was, you know, just, brand
like
new release.
Special opening price.
Yeah. You know, stores here often do that. The first week, you'll get a little bit of a discount. It's nothing like the Steam sales, but, you know, you get a little bit of a discount just to get that extra you know, enticement over the other games, which are kind of vying for your attention too.
Okay. $45 sounds quite a lot of money 14 years ago.
It was, you know, at the time. Most games came out at, you know, 40 to 50, and that was, I think, the most I had spent on a game ever. You know, it. I usually waited till they were, you know, 20, 30 bucks, or I knew enough about them, you know, from reviews and maybe playing a demo that that I was confident I would love the game, and then I would buy it.
Okay.
And I sort of took a little bit of a chance on Half-Life. You know, I hadn't played it. The demo uplink didn't come out until months after the game was out, strangely. But it had some good buzz and interesting advertisements. And I figured, you know, what the heck, I'd just give it a shot. And, you know, I guess it kind of paid off. So.
Yeah, $45, well spent, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
After all the hours you spent. Emo, what about you? I mean, you must have been pretty young. I'm not going to ask how old you were, but were you playing games when Half-Life was first released?
Yes, I was. I actually started playing games, I think, don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years old. I was playing NES console, well, obviously not NES, but Dendy, which was in Russia, unlicensed clone, and Spectrum computer.
Okay. All right. So did you buy Half-Life when it was first released, or did you wait a little bit longer?
I don't even heard about Half-Life when it was released, but because there was no internet, so no way to follow any news or something.
But true.
Of course, the very, very strong gaming experience was when first PC I've got, and it had Doom and a lot of custom mods with it installed.
Okay.
And that's how I was introduced to the idea of creating a new places for the same game and making the opening the potential of that game, and I really liked it. And even more, on that computer, Norton Commander was set up in a way that if you just select the WOD file and press enter, it automatically launched Doom with that WOD file. So I didn't even know how to launch Doom, but still was able to play.
Okay. So had you completed Doom before you started playing Half-Life?
Yeah, I did. Mostly I played first episode because I didn't know what the texts in the menu means, so I didn't touch them. I just put on the main menu, then enter, and that's the first episode. It was quite a challenge. I saw in the demos that you're supposed to open doors, but I didn't know myself how to open it, and then after a while I finally understood that the space bar actually opens them.
And okay.
Another game was Helicopter Simulator Comanche.
Oh, I've heard of it, but I haven't played it. Have you played it, Dawn?
No, I haven't. I have heard of it too, though. Yeah.
I don't. Well, I wasn't too much into it. I enjoyed Doom a lot more.
Okay. And well, be careful what you say about enjoying Doom more than Half-Life here, huh? So,
I think there were a lot of many games, and a lot of many different games, and Half-Life was one of them, and I just kind of all blend together. I don't know.
Okay.
One cool game was Red Line Gunk Warfare 2066. It was, I think, a 1998 release, but I don't remember correctly. It has a cool gameplay mechanic. It's a shooter, but you can also ride various cars. There are light cars, medium cars, very strong cars, and various levels, including huge open spaces for cars.
Okay, it sounds like you remember a lot more about the other games than you do about Half-Life.
Coming to Half-Life, I have the old CD from that title right in front of me with the Vortigaunt, who just broke a door in the Unforeseen Consequences, and title says Half-Life Russian version, and you can read about how good, in quotes, Russian translation was in my review of Black Mesa Inbound, and I think it's actually not possible to translate Half-Life into other language because it uses words, English words, and it builds phrases from them. So other language is different. So how can you? I don't
translate.
Think
yeah. it's possible. Don, you were going to say?
No, no. I just found it interesting that it was difficult to.
So
it really understand, you know, what we take it maybe as second nature, Philip, you know, the story and the background and the sort of what the text fills in, you know, during the game.
Absolutely. I mean, if you didn't have any of those things, then it wouldn't be stupid or it wouldn't be, you know, unguessable, but just the little, you know, the little speeches that the NPCs give you and all of those things, they all add to that atmosphere. And without them, and especially the announcements from the, you know, the PA system.
Yeah, even the tram ride voice.
At the beginning.
Yeah, because that gives you a lot of sort of interesting, you know, quirks going on and you know, sort of what's happening in Black Mesa. Yeah, just interesting atmosphere that may not, you know, sort of translate across different languages. Never really thought about that much.
And we take it for granted nowadays that when a game's released, it's released in many different languages. But I suppose back in 1998, it didn't work that way. And when there was a Russian version, it maybe took a few months for it to come out, or Spanish, French.
Unlicensed translation, so there's no real quality assurance.
Okay. Does anybody know if it's available in Russian now?
I would think.
Half-Life 2 is, isn't it?
I would think it would be, but I don't know for sure.
Half-Life 2 is available in Russian. It actually
it's Half-Life 1?
Two translations. Half-Life 1, I think Russian publisher who officially sells Half-Life 1, if I remember correctly, they just sell English version.
Wow. Okay.
What about if you get it through Steam? Do they not offer a translation?
Through Steam?
Yeah, through Steam. If you downloaded Half-Life 1 through Steam.
Yeah, I have a Steam version, but I never saw the translations because I play games in English and not interested in translations because I found that most of the time they're not worth checking out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes publishers don't release translations in Steam, like Doom 3 has no Russian version there.
Fair enough. And on to the next point, which is how many times have you played it,
Wait,
Don?
Phil, hang on, before we go, I want to hear your background there, Phil.
True, yeah.
You're not just the interviewer here.
No, you're right, sorry. Well, my background comes from mainly playing Unreal, which I got into through a demo on one of those magazines, which was Unreal Tournament, and then I found out about Unreal, and then I was on the internet a little bit, and I'd heard about this Half-Life game, and I was so into the Unreal community that I didn't really want to look because I was scared it would take me away from, you know, this new community that I just started to become part of. And I remember being in PC World, and I remember seeing the three boxes, so Half-Life, Opposing Force, and Blue Shift. Mm. So I certainly didn't get it when it at first was first released.
Right, I think Blue Shift came out in 2001 or so.
Yeah, and okay. And I'm pretty sure that I bought it as I think it was called the Generations Edition, which was like a blue, thick DVD box, which had all three games, plus probably Counter-Strike and Team Fortress involved. And that was my first purchase. So I'm a new boy. I'm really late to the party.
You've still been playing it for 10 years, though. So
yeah, I suppose, yeah. And, of course, the moment I was on the Black Mesa Inbound, I was completely hooked. If you'd have said to me, Unreal, I'd have said, what's that? It's forgotten already. Just, you know.
And I think that's why the Half-Life Day 1 demo that was, you know, sort of released to the media and with video cards really generated the buzz. You know, it wasn't just a demo level. It was the full, you know, first 15% of the game or something like that.
I
as,
think it's
almost exactly as
piece.
We played.
Similar to old shareware model.
Is it? It's available as a shareware now.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
Day 1 can be downloaded through the internet for free.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it's not technically it's not shareware, but you can get
Similar.
it.
Yeah.
It does seem strange that they only released it on certain video cards. I suppose I think it was Nvidia. They probably paid them to do that.
I think so. It was more to, at the time, nobody had really fast internet connections. So down, I don't know the size of Half-Life Day One, but I got to believe it was probably several hundred megabytes. And that would have been difficult at the time for anybody to download.
Yeah, or if not impossible.
Yeah, I mean, even when Uplink came out, it was, a good, I don't know, 50 megabytes or so, and that was challenging if you were at home. You had to leave your modem going overnight,
Yeah.
So.
It does seem strange that they released that a few months after. Maybe that was a marketing ploy that after there'd been a lull in the initial sales, they released something for free, gets more people interested.
Yeah, I mean, following closely on the heels of that was the first major patch, which added Team Fortress Classic, and
Ah,
maybe
okay.
more importantly, the custom game option,
Ah.
which was not there originally. So,
So people couldn't make mods when it was originally released.
no, you could make maps, you could
Ah.
load maps, and that's why some of the first things we saw, in the first 6 months, maybe after Half-Life was released, were mostly just map packs. Mods to an extent, in that you could replace models, you could replace textures, but the code wasn't available easily. You actually had to sign an NDA with Valve, and they would send you the source code on a CD for the first
Really?
couple of years. Yeah. I mean, the
Wow.
multiplayer code they made available, I think, about when Team Fortress came out, Team Fortress Classic came out. But the single player code, and some of the other things in their SDK, like the modeling tools and some of the texturing tools, things like that, were only available, from Valve if you signed an NDA, and then they would send you a CD. So, somewhere around here, I still have the CD that was just sent by Harry Teasley over at Valve.
Wow,
There
that's
you
so
go.
cool. For the listeners who don't know, an NDA is a non-disclosure agreement, which basically means that you can't talk about whatever you've been disclosed. So you couldn't distribute that. You couldn't tell anybody what was on it. You have to be, you have to keep the secret.
Right. It
Is that?
ran for a year, I think, when we signed it. So, it was still in maybe 2000 or so, where you could actually post tutorials and open source your code if you had been working on a mod, things like that.
Okay, all right. So, back to that question then. How many times have you played it? Emo, how many times have you played all the way
Countless.
through? Not just pieces, but all the way through.
I did count, but that obviously I was a lot of times through Half-Life until I discovered Half-Life Source, and then I started to play it because it's a lot better, has better lighting, better graphics, shaders, realistic water, ragdolls.
So
So
you really
it's a lot
enjoy
more
Half-Life
fun.
Source, don't you?
Yes, because it's a lot more fun. You can play with headcrabs, ragdolls, for example. Like I showed the Half-Life Source fan video by shooting them at the right time on day 4. If you do the same in the original Half-Life Day 4, the same way all the time, just playing the animation and with ragdolls, it's a lot better.
Okay. Have you played Half-Life Source, Don?
Oh yeah. I enjoy it. I've played that maybe 2 or 3 times through Half-Life Source, but
Forgive me for laughing, but it just seems so crazy to me. But carry on. Sorry.
crazy why.
Because I can't imagine playing something so many times.
Oh, you have no idea. You didn't ask how many times I've played Half-Life, Gold
Yeah, and I
Source.
was going to get to that. I'm still waiting for Emo to give me a definitive answer. Is it more than 10, Emo? Let's include Half-Life and Half-Life Source together.
I think it is more than 10, definitely.
All right, more than 10. Okay, Don, go on, tell us.
Much more than 10, yes.
Oh,
Well, I would also include in there, I've played through a couple times in Sven co-op with a couple of friends. They've ported the single play, sort of the single player campaign or Half-Life maps into Sven co-op and made it harder with different aliens and monsters and challenges and things like that.
wow.
So I've probably played through that set of maps maybe 2 or 3 times, Half-Life Source 2 or 3 times, and then Half-Life Gold Source 12 to 15 times, maybe. I don't know. It's been 14 years, you know.
I know, but that's like once a year. I can't imagine playing it once a year.
Well, often, you know, it's to investigate something, you know, mapping wise or technically, how do they do it, or you know, what happened here. One time I went through, I just wanted to look for the G-Man appearance, you know, that type of thing. It's
okay. All right. I mean, now that I've played twice, and this event was my second time, I did start it once or twice, but then I got bored. I'll be honest. I got bored. And I was probably focused on working on the site or, you know, playing some mods. But now that I've played it a second time, I feel more open to the idea of going through again and maybe playing at my own speed as well, because I actually feel that I rushed when I played the tree event, and I rushed because I felt the pressure of having to post, not every day because it wasn't every day, but I felt that pressure, and perhaps without that pressure, I might have played at a slower pace and I might have enjoyed it more and spotted some of the things that I didn't, and, you know, all those kind of things.
Mm.
Did you play quickly through the tree event, Emo?
It was. I actually played through everything two times.
During the tree event?
To report play times, second time to review, because I forget everything. I need to see everything again to do a review.
All right, fair enough. Don, did you go through quickly or at my speed?
I went through pretty quickly. If you look at our comparative accumulated play time on the main tree page there, I think I spent about half the time that you did playing Half-Life. And a lot of that comes from just not speeding through it, but knowing what to expect and knowing where I don't need to look, and, you know, having maybe not quite memorized. Like, I don't have Half-Life memorized enough that I could draw a map by hand like that one guy did of the entire, you know, game. But which is an interesting picture, because I think it's pretty accurate. But you have a certain memory for things, even if it's been well over a year since I've last played most of the game. But I made it through in just over 6 hours, I guess. And the first time through, I certainly didn't play at the pace I do now. It probably took more like 15 hours, I would guess. A lot of it was just came from not being very skilled in movement, and I found a lot of jumps difficult and that type of thing.
So. Okay. Which does bring us on to the next topic, really, which is how are you different as a player now and then? From my point of view, I agree with Don what you just said. I mean, I'm technically more proficient at aiming and shooting and moving and all of those kind of things. But I think that I'm probably more careless now because of it. In the past, believe it or not, I think I died less times the first time I played it than I did this time. Probably because I wasn't worried about dying, because it didn't have any actual consequences. I think that's the biggest difference for me. What about you, Emo? How are you different the first time you played it to the most recent time?
Well, it's just, like you said, more efficient in moving, in jumping. In shooting, but still Half-Life is hard, and there are places to die. And nowadays I play it faster, and this time Half-Life seems a much shorter game than it was back in the day.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Do you remember which difficulty level you played at? I mean, I played on easy the first time, and this time I played on medium, which gives me another opportunity, of course, to play on hard. But do you remember which difficulty levels?
I don't. Maybe easy, maybe normal. Hard. Okay. I remember playing Half-Life 2 on all difficulties. But Half-Life 1, nowadays I play on normal all the time, because that's just the right difficulty for me.
Okay, Don?
I always start on medium. Nowadays, if it's Half-Life itself, I'll play on hard. Most of the mods, I'll play on medium still.
Okay.
And I actually, honestly, for the most part of the game, I found hard to be too easy for me now. not to brag or anything, but I mean, you've gone through the game, you know, 15 times. I mean, exactly. I know every corner of Black Mesa now. Or, well, actually, I shouldn't say that, because I didn't.
There was a couple of things that were new for you from the tree event.
Certainly, absolutely, and it surprises me that Half-Life can still surprise me. You know, to be honest. So.
Absolutely, and that's a great thing. I mean, for us to be sitting here now and talking about a game that was released 14 years ago, and to say, "Oh my God, I've played it like so many times, and I never saw this before," and I mean, a great example of that was those two videos that were posted recently about the Hound Eyes and how they work together as groups and how the different color sonic waves tell you how many people are, how many Hound Eyes are in the group, the squad leader and all of those things. That's just incredible. Have you seen those videos, Emo?
What videos?
The videos.
I missed it, sorry.
That's okay. There's a video that shows people how the Hound Eyes work together. When you see them together, they're not just a group of three or four. They're actually in a team, and there's a team leader. And you can affect the behavior of those Hound Eyes by shooting the team leader. And when they fire their sonic weapon, it actually changes color based on the number of people, the number of Hound Eyes in the group.
The number of who in the group?
Hound Eyes. You know, the ones that look like dogs.
So
I'm not gonna link it to you now, but I'll link it to you afterwards.
It's somewhere on your site, Philip, isn't it?
Sorry?
Isn't it somewhere on your site?
It is.
In like the August
chat or but
okay.
It's in the resources and curiosities. But what I'm saying is, I don't really want Nemo to watch it now because that'll kind of interrupt the podcast, but there was that one on how to feed a bull squid, which I didn't know anything about.
Foot head traps?
No. Basically, if there's like a body, or if it's in the frozen section where there's some meat, you can draw the bull squid towards you and it will ignore you and eat the meat or the body that's on the floor.
It's an interesting video, yeah. I didn't know either of these before I saw the video, although I had seen in the Hound Eye code, in the C++ code, there's actually references and a section of code that is dedicated to the number of Hound Eyes in a given squad and the color. I just never really gave it much thought until the video.
I can't say I've ever even noticed the different colors, because as soon as we get that, I start shooting and hacking away anyway. I don't wait to see what color there is, but it's just a great example of how much depth, not only the story, the location, but, you know, the actual gameplay had as well. That's really what we're talking about there. So other things on the list would be... we have to take a break there. So we were talking about how different we are as players. I think another aspect is I'm much more tactical now. I'm still not particularly tactical, but I'm more than I was in the past. In the past, I probably would have just fired my biggest gun at any time, whereas now I'm much more conservative. If I've got like a grenade, or I've got, you know, the secondary fire from the machine gun, I'm more careful with it, whereas in the past it was the biggest weapons first, and then it would just get to the weaker weapons as I ran out of ammo. Can you notice any differences in the strategy like that?
Yeah, I don't think I've changed much. I think I was generally the other way around. I would generally just keep one of the weaker guns out most of the time. The machine gun's a good example, the MP5, and because there's so many bullets available for it. But if you had any grenades, they were also right there at the touch of a button. You didn't even have to switch weapons to use it.
Yeah.
So I find that to be my sort of default go-to weapon just about all the time, unless I have a surplus of, you know, 357 ammo or crossbow ammo, and I start using that instead. But I generally keep one of the weaker weapons out.
You consider the MP5 as a weaker weapon?
In the grand scheme, yeah, because it's not very good at long range, especially. I mean, up close it can do pretty quick damage, but if you're shooting, a soldier or something, and he's more than 50 feet away, it'll take quite a while to kill him with the MP5.
Yeah. What about you, Emo? How do you feel about your weapons tactics?
Well, tactics. One time ago it was more about repeating the same place until you get lucky, and of course, computer lagging, and that didn't help also. Then when I got better, I developed a habit of saving strong weapons and saving, and this cost me dying sometimes, and just now I realized that it's better to use every weapon how it was intended, and there are situations where you have to use strong weapons, and inability to use them leads to bad consequences. So I started to use strong weapons more often. Also, it's surprising that despite playing the game so many times, I still sometimes discover new tactics to defeat monsters. Like, yes, just recently I discovered that you can defeat boost within Half-Life Source if you crouch in front of it and hit it with the crowbar. Then you defeat it with little or no damage. And that,
really? You can crouch and get very close and use the crowbar against the bull squid.
Yes. In original Half-Life, the tactic is different because it's less aggressive there, so you can hit it with crowbar, then run back, then hit crowbar, then again run back. But in Half-Life Source, they made bull squid more aggressive, so that tactic doesn't work.
And okay.
It works if you crouch in front of it, because in Half-Life Source, they also made the crowbar stronger, like you can kill headcrabs just from one hit, and in Half-Life original, I don't remember, but definitely more than one hit it requires.
It's
and
two also hits, discover... I think, yeah.
Maybe. Sorry, Don?
I was just saying, it's two hits on medium for a crowbar on a headcrab, yeah. Sorry. I can tell you, and I think it's three on hard, you know, so...
Oh my goodness, I can't... Forgive me for laughing. I'm not laughing at you, I'm just laughing at the general concept that you can tell me how many hits from a crowbar, you know, in different, you know... How many health points does headcrab have on hard? Quick.
20. Well, okay, in my own defense here... A lot of my knowledge comes from mapping and the technical side, you know, because I actually right now I'm making a mod for Half-Life to make the single player harder, if you believe that. So I hope to come out with that soon. But so that's why I know a headcrab has 20 health, you know, hit points on hard. But so I got a little bit of excuse there. I dig
into the technical
side
enough.
Of things more than
you're right.
Most, let's say.
You're right. But let's go back to that point that Emo was making a little earlier about the idea of, you know, using weapons when they're given to you. And Valve did a very good job, really, because when you get a weapon, you pretty much need it 10 minutes later. And perhaps you could say that's the same for all games. But... one of the things that I did find, especially playing mods, is that too often I finished a mod with so much ammo and so many of the best weapons. That's one of the reasons I don't keep them anymore, because you never know when it's going to end. So while I've got it, I should use it. Yeah, maybe in 10 minutes I wish I hadn't, but you never know what's going to happen in 10 minutes. But Valve did a good job of spacing out the weapons, giving them to you just when you're about to need them. Those kind of things. Do we think that the weapons we got in the game were imaginative or boring, or what do you
imaginative.
Think?
Imaginative. There's great variety. Like, for example, the Alien Grunt's head looks original, and the Gauss gun also, it's a weapon that you cannot fight any analogs or snark. It doesn't. You cannot just say that it's just something simple like a shotgun or different version of grenade or different version of machine gun, because it's different than that.
Yes, and the Gauss gun is very good because it can help you jump a lot, can't it?
Don? Especially in multiplayer, but yes.
Okay.
In single player too, yeah. But yeah, I found, you know, in general, I think the Half-Life found the perfect balance between, you know, sort of having a good mixture of weapons and not overwhelming the player with too many. In other words, you don't have, it's not Counter-Strike where you have five different machine guns. You know, you have one machine gun.
Yeah.
In opposing force, you get a second. Okay, it's not that many. You know, you have one shotgun. You have, you know, a couple of pistols. It's not a plethora of weapons to choose from. And then you have, I like the mixture of the experimental
and sci-fi.
Yeah, the sci-fi experimental weapons. I like the Gauss gun too. And the Snarks are probably one of my favorites, actually.
Really? Oh, I hate those things.
When they're coming at me, I hate them, but having them is great.
Okay, yeah, when you're like stroking them and about to throw them.
they'll take care of head crabs really quick for you.
How powerful are they? Because when I was playing Half-Life, in the last level, I had like 20. I don't know how many maximum I can have, but I had maximum. And I threw them down all at the gargantuan. And they actually, I don't know, maybe I'd thrown a few rockets at him before, but they seemed to kill him.
I didn't think they damaged him. I know they bother him, but I don't know.
Well, there was like lots of this, you know, like the yellow flesh that sort of
sprouts
out. Right,
the blood.
Yeah, the blood, yeah. And, I mean, I didn't fire any other weapon after I'd thrown all of my snarks, and he exploded.
Wow, okay.
So
Half-Life,
you know,
still surprises.
Yeah, unless I made a mistake and I wasn't paying any attention and I was shooting. But I don't think so, because I didn't have much ammo left anyway.
No, I would say in general they can do a decent amount of damage. I mean, they, you know, I would say you just dump 10 or so in a closed area and see how quick you die. But
yeah,
you know, they're good against grunts. Even if they don't kill them, they can distract them. They're great against head crabs, you know, especially if there's a bunch of head crabs. Because the head crabs don't attack the snarks, but the snarks will attack the head crabs.
Okay.
Yeah,
and they follow you.
I find them fun. Yeah, as long as you stay out of their way, snarks are fun.
That's the phrase. That's the tagline for this podcast, I think. And do you have a favorite weapon, Emo?
Favorite shotgun, maybe.
Shotgun, a very classic choice.
What about you, Philip?
Crossbow.
Crossbow, huh?
Yeah, I just the sound, and I don't know, it's not a particularly nice weapon, is it really? I mean, the concept of shooting a bolt through somebody, it's not very nice, but it's very useful. All right then, so let's start at the end, as it were. So now we've talked about a little bit about the background and our feelings when we first played and all those kind of things. What's our overall feeling about the game compared to the first time you played it? You'd like to start, Don?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we touched on this a little bit, you know, just a few minutes ago. And I think now, as a mapper and having played Half-Life, you know, so many times, it's sort of a different perspective. The first time through, I was full of wonder and awe, and it was very challenging. And I loved soaking up the atmosphere, and I felt like it was so mysterious and so interesting. And now, you know, I know the story pretty well, and I know the music and the feel of Black Mesa, but it still feels interesting to me, and it's still fun to play through. And it's hard to describe, but I don't know. Some of it's maybe just a different level of appreciation. I look maybe more at the technical side of things on how and why Valve did a certain thing, and then their overall design and how they, as you mentioned, sort of place weapons right when you're going to need them, and you don't overwhelm the player with choices, but you still allow enough flexibility, you know, like a decent game flow throughout the game. Now, there are some maybe boring parts, you could argue, but overall, it's still a great experience.
Would you say that, having seen behind the curtain, you have a greater appreciation for the game, or has the wonder gone out of it in a way?
I wouldn't say the wonder has gone out, because every time I hear the opening music from the tram ride, it still gets me right in the gut. It still brings me right back to November 1998, and I was like, wow, this is going to be a great game, you know. So no, I still have some of that sort of childish anxiety, you know, when I start up the game.
Childlike,
not childish. But I would say it's a little bit like, you know, what, maybe watching your favorite movie on DVD and then watching all the extras on how they made it. It's hard to say whether it's more better perspective or not, but it's just a different perspective. You maybe appreciate some of the workings behind the curtain.
Emo, what about you? How do you feel, you know, it's different? Was it better the first time you played it or better the most recent time?
Well, of course, first time you play a great game is the best because it makes you very, very, very happy and excited and to see what the game has to offer. But right now, I'm still appreciate that the game is very various in its environments and gameplay. And I think that it's one of the key points of Half-Life's success, its variety. And back in the day, it was very impressed with its variety, especially when you go to the cliff scene in Opposing Force, which is absolutely different from what you've seen before. And then there's that awesome scene when you use the tactical map and do airstrikes, and then the alien world, Xen, it was so inspiring, so impressive. I actually thought the Half-Life engine is great and have unlimited abilities. And coming to think of it now, looks like this thought is right because, for example, look at the mod Paranoia, which lets you visit a realistic military base, then realistic industrial zone, secret laboratories, and Cry of Fear, which is a survival horror shooter and quest puzzles in some European city, and maybe other environments also, which I didn't get to visit yet.
Okay, but yes, you're right. There's plenty of variety in Half-Life, in, you know, location and weapons and gameplay tactics. You never get to do the same thing for too long. Just when you think, this is getting, maybe it's going to get boring if I have to do this for much longer, you're off to somewhere new. So I agree. For me, everything was enhanced, and that's good and bad. So, for example, when I played Blast Pit this time, and maybe Surface Tension as well, I was blown away. That was just unbelievable, fantastic. And then when I played the Xen levels, God, I hated them. And that's really how I felt the first time I played. I really enjoyed the Earthbound levels, and I didn't enjoy the Xen levels. This time, I loved the Earthbound levels and hated the Xen levels. So it was like everything was like almost exaggerated for me this second time around. So I'm a bit nervous what will happen the third time. Whether it'll be different. So that was for me. What about the highs and lows? What was your favorite part or element, Don, from the whole game?
In terms of chapter or just general?
I don't know. You can just say this particular moment, or you can say I enjoyed this chapter or this level. Anything that you know. I mean, Emo mentioned the, you know, calling in the ground strike.
Yeah.
I mean, that moment was just fantastic for me, but you decide.
The one that, well, okay, my absolute favorite, which I'm sure is a lot of people's favorite, is one that Emo also mentioned, is when you're crawling out the pipe onto the cliff. I love that moment, and I love that level, even if it's actually pretty simple from a from a technical standpoint. It's really just a rock wall with a bunch of different, you know, sort of paths on it up and down. But that is the one level I really, really like in Half-Life Source.
Okay.
What's different
about it in Source?
They've changed the skybox. Source allows you to use a 3D skybox rather than just a texture. So if there's one level anybody, you know, wants to look at to see what Half-Life Source, you know, can really do, that's probably the best example. Is just going out on the cliff. You've got a little stream below. You've got actual mesas and other cliffs in the distance. It certainly gives you a sense of height and location much more than Gold Source does.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that was a good level. I mean, I remember not being scared, but being apprehensive that I couldn't move around too quickly because if I fell off, then, you know.
There are nice details like rocks fall down and bridge, which is breaks.
Yes, and the sound effects are so good there because you sort of hear it before you notice it.
And hard jump using the pipe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I always tried that the first time, and I don't do that anymore, to slide down the big pipe. I usually take the long way down, the slow way down instead now.
I don't even know about this. I thought that the pipe is the only way, so half life still surprises.
Well, actually, this level is great fun in Sven co-op because it's not only, you got a couple people playing through there,
you
but
get on someone's head.
Well, not just that, but there's also it's multiplayer, so there is you can jump with the Gauss gun, like long, jump long distances with the Gauss gun. So it's great fun to try jumping from right where you exit the pipe over to the other pipe you have to crawl into.
Really? That far?
Oh yeah, yeah. You can do in multiplayer in Half-Life Deathmatch and Sven co-op. You can, you charge up the Gauss gun. And then you jump and you kind of get shot in the opposite direction. So yeah, you can get quite a long ways. Now I think I've only made that jump successfully once, but it's great fun to try on that level. you just go splat if you miss it. But.
Cool. Okay, Emo, what's your favorite part?
Oh, I like a lot of places in the game, and I cannot really pick one and say that it's. The most
doesn't
favorite.
Have to be your, the most favorite, but just a favorite part.
Well, I can note Black Mesa Inbound. It still thrills with its variety. It's the train ride is done very well. Valve knew that they have to make it wireless to prevent players from being bombed, and I think they achieved that goal. What else? Long the atmosphere. The design, what was inspiring for me is the weekday atmosphere and the design in the animals, materials, and also the teleporter room in Lambda Complex. So the beginning of typical disaster mode is a mix of those. There are laboratories, there are weekday, and there are optional exploration and also teleporters which you can use to move between various parts.
Is that your mod? Yeah. Did you say typical disaster?
Yes, that's my mod.
Is that on the site, Philip's site? I have.
Yes.
Oh, I. Sorry, I feel bad. I should go play that and review it.
I appreciate if you reviewed. This mod is love hate. Some people love it. Some people don't, because the design is old fashioned. And nowadays, it looks bland from today's standards. And also, it requires some hard jumping, and that also, not everybody like it.
Yeah, but you can't please everybody. When you're building something,
skills.
You have to,
if there are people who gave it a point now, they're like, I think I'm successful.
Yeah, I mean, some people gave it play now. I can't remember what. Do you remember what I said? Let me open it up.
You said play it now.
Right? Did I say play it now? I'm pretty sure I enjoyed it. Okay, so.
Yeah, you just said that there are so hard jumps that you have to use cheats to complete most of them.
But then again, some people didn't like it. But you're right. When you make something that's not old fashioned, but designed more like the original game, then there's always going to be people who say, they wanted something new. So I wouldn't worry about
that. With my latest maps that I'm now making for Half-Life, I actually try to just, go wild and treat it just like a modern game, not like Half-Life. So put a lot of brushes, a lot of details.
Okay.
Don't tell me you're adding iron sights and
changes. Although the amount of brushes is so high that I wouldn't be surprised that if it will work only on Steam version of Half-Life and not work on one version.
Oh dear. So my favorite part, I think, is the section in Blast Pit where you have to go down, I think it's Blast Pit, and you're in this huge industrial area with all of the hazardous waste.
Is that the elevator that falls from below you? You mean? Mm-hmm. Oh, the barrels going around. I think.
Yeah, kind of area just before the barrels. I just remember, looking around here and thinking, this is incredible. This is the kind of place that I'd really like to actually visit in real life.
A radiation suit on. I'm sure.
Well, yeah, or hopefully no hazardous waste, but I certainly wouldn't want to. visit Zen, for example, but it was, I think it was probably the biggest area I'd seen within the game. Now, maybe that's not technically true, but from a player's point of view, it seems the biggest indoor area.
Yeah, I think Blast Pit is the first one to really give you a sense of the scale that Black Mesa can have. You know, not just that area, but before that, when you're actually going into the rocket test chamber, you know, the walkways that you have to negotiate just to get to that central chamber, always give me a, you know, kind of a little bit of a sense of wonder, saying, well, I mean, because we hadn't seen things like that in games previously, really. So,
no, exactly. So that was me. And next on our list of things is the least favorite elements. Well, I mean, I'll start, which was just the general idea of Zen. I didn't really like all of that jumping. And now I've seen videos of how it's played, perhaps I could, you know, cut the time that I spent in Zen down by half. But I was less impressed with that than I was in other places. Now, what about you?
Sorry, real quick, Philip, to clarify. When you say Zen, you really mean the beginning of a Zen chapter to the end of the game?
Yeah.
Okay, because the Zen chapter itself is actually pretty short. I mean, there are tricky jumps to make, but it's not... I don't see that personally as something that people complain about. It's maybe Interloper more than anything else.
Yeah, when I say Zen, I mean actually the location rather than the name of the chapter.
Right, fair enough.
But because you're right, Zen, the chapter itself is quite short, and it wasn't that bad. It was maybe a very clever move by Valve because it was a nice gentle introduction to the whole concept. But Interloper, didn't really particularly enjoyed it.
See, I would actually, you know, that was on my list of highs, believe it or not. And it surprised me a little bit too. But when I played through, you know, the game, and especially Interloper this time through, I found it not to be so much challenging in the jumps. It wasn't, I guess, in the first map where you sort of have to go down and you have to ride that manta ray across to get to the teleporter when you're outside.
Yeah.
But when you're in the factories, what I like the most is that Valve made you feel out of sorts. And, you know, you could argue that's good or bad. Yes, there's more jumping puzzles and things like that. And the textures are, you know, different, and it's certainly an alien environment. But I think that was intentional for the most part, and they added, especially they added a lot of verticality to the game. Is verticality?
They did.
Is that a word? I don't know. But
you
know
just
I mean.
Created it. That's fine by me.
Okay. Well, I'll trademark that then. But you know, especially in the last, maybe the second to last map of Interloper, where you have to go all the way up the factory, and you can see the teleporter, the rotating teleporter, you know, way up at the ceiling. I thought that was a great turn on the gameplay. We had had some, you know, vertical gameplay before in Blast Pit and Surface Tension, of course, but not as much as Interloper. And I found it to be the most challenging part of the game on hard, which is maybe influences how much I liked it this time through. But I was surprised that I would call that actually a high point in my playthrough this time around.
Okay. Emo, what about you? Maybe the least favorite?
Tentacles, because it requires you to move in stealth mode of the steel, and that's very slow. And I'm patient, and if you just run and
they catch you.
Yes,
you get
a high
spike
chance
through the
that
head.
They catch you.
Yeah, true. I mean, I didn't enjoy the tentacles. When I talk about my blast pit, it was just the general feeling of the whole area. But
yes,
I agree with you.
Great.
Those tentacles were not very much fun to...
I actually tried to capture a few screenshots, and in my blast pit review, you can see a few screenshots titled Great Atmosphere of Blast Pit.
Okay. All right. What about... We've kind of fallen out of order here. I'm sorry, but things that surprised you... Or have we talked about your least favorite level, Don, or element?
No, not really. I residue processing was my least favorite.
You didn't like that one.
I thought
I
that
enjoyed
was
the conveyor belts and stuff.
See, I didn't like that because it was purely movement based puzzles. There is almost no combat, and I thought maybe I'm skipping ahead here to what would I have changed about the game, but I would have. I don't mind. I like the setting of residue processing, the really industrial, you know, whatever they're processing there, who knows. But
Residue.
Yeah, sure, Residue. I liked the setting. I just didn't like the gameplay there, which was purely, you know, move, jump, avoid these things are clearly just there to crush you. I thought it could have been made better by an overarching goal, kind of like we had in Blast Pit or in Power Up, where you have to, there's a clear goal you have to do. You don't just have to move through these, you know, very contrived traps, you know, kind of like Super Nintendo style that are just there to crush you, but you actually have something that you're going for. I thought that could have been improved quite a bit. So that was my most frustrating part of the game is always residue processing.
To counter your argument there, I actually enjoyed it because I felt it was a rest from combat. Mm. And there are so many places that you can get off the conveyor belt and just sort of stop and breathe. And I can't remember what it came after, but I felt that I was being pressured and rushed. And I finally got to like residue processing, and it was like, okay, I can take a breather here. Right. You know, thanks guys. I really appreciate you building this in.
That chapter comes right after you get knocked out.
Apprehension.
Yeah, because during apprehension, I think you become, I found almost too powerful. I mean, you go through most of apprehension with a lot of contact grenades, you know, the machine gun grenades, and then you get the crossbow and a lot of ammo for the crossbow. So by the end of apprehension, right before they take your weapons and knock you out and put you in the garbage dispenser, you're actually pretty powerful, and you don't really return to that until probably Surface Tension.
A long time.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously that was planned that way.
Oh, certainly.
You know, just to give it a break and for you to have to build up again. And
it's hard to maintain a high for, you know, a fever pitch for that long, because then it just tires players out. I'm sure they might have even found this during playtesting. You need highs and lows, or else your highs and lows don't mean anything. You know.
The highs become less interesting, even if they're higher than previous highs, because you don't have a comparison. True. And surprises. Anything that surprised you this time around?
Magical lights.
Sorry, the lights.
The hanging lights? Is it?
Because, you know, Wolf considered geniuses and all that, and then you see this stupid mistake. Lights in on the rail chapter and in Lambda Core at the beginning of Conventional Galactics, you just see lights which don't connect it to ceiling, don't connect it to walls, so they just magically hanging.
Right, but
technology, because in Xen you can also see hanging lights which have something like an engine or something on the bottom of them which helps them to hang.
But that's from a technical point of view, really, isn't it? I mean, if you haven't played 10 times and you're not looking for these mistakes, you probably wouldn't see them. I mean, I can't remember, except in the hazard course where there was a ladder that was lit with no source of light, I can't say that I particularly noticed those kind of aspects. But both of you are map modders, so that does make a difference, doesn't it?
And we've both played the game, you know, 10 or more times, and I think I didn't notice any of these the first time through. Certainly, even when I was a mapper, a couple times through, but then you start noticing them here and there as you explore more, and mapping helps too.
So, any surprises?
I'm still surprised that there were places in Black Mesa and Xen that I had never seen before, especially given that I've played the game, you know, and I usually
so many times.
Rush through. I play at a reasonable pace usually. But there was, you know, one in, Forget About Freeman. There's a little hidden room with a HEV charger, and then there was a...
Yeah.
Under the stairs somewhere, there's, like, the name Rilla or something.
Oh, right, that's from Dave Riller, one of the mappers. I think, Emo, you pointed that out, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if you don't get the light at the right angle, you might not have seen it. So, you know, you can understand why people go in there, they have a quick look around, and they're back out again. There's no obvious weapons or ammo or anything. So,
but still,
there
were some caches like that, and there's one on Xen that I didn't know about until I watched William's video. of, you know, you sort of right where the Gargantua comes out and breaks the rocks, you can run up to the, there's a little ledge on the left side you can run up and over, and there's armor and snarks or something up there that you can collect.
I got to that through the other way. If you go around the back, you can get into the room from the other side. That's how I found it.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Well, okay. Well, it's still surprises, apparently. So I'll have to load that up and maybe I'll play again, you know?
I didn't get the Gargantua coming at me until I got out of that room.
Okay.
So, yeah. And there might even be a healing pool in there. I'm not sure, is there?
Oh, there is in the back way, yeah. If you go... Yes.
Oh, maybe we're not talking about the same way then.
We might be talking about slightly different areas in the same general area, but yeah. There are actually quite a few hidden things in Zen, and then even in Black Mesa.
Okay. And I mean, it's interesting that, as you may know, I've been posting a walkthrough written by Stanley Dunnigan. And his walkthrough, I did a little research, and his walkthrough was the most comprehensive I found. So I contacted him and said, look, are you interested in having it, you know, promoted on my site? And he was very enthusiastic. And almost after every chapter, he emailed me and said, look, I had to update it because there were things that people talked about that I didn't know about. And I saw this in a video. So even people who write the walkthroughs, there's still so many surprises. From my point of view, the most surprising was how easy it can be if you know what to do. Mm. So, for example, going on to that Zen level that we were talking about earlier, where you have to go on the top of the, what are they called, mantas? No.
Yeah, a manta ray, I call them.
A manta, yeah, I mean, yeah. It's not that, but yeah. Now, I didn't know that you could just jump on one of those at the beginning and avoid all of the other trouble and just go straight across to the portal.
Yeah.
Now, and I thought to myself, oh my God, that is so clever of them, because they don't make it obvious, yet they still allow you to discover things. And if you know what you're doing, playing Half-Life can be so much easier than I played it, for example.
Well, I find one of the most interesting things to watch are some of the speed runs that are done.
Mm.
Of course, as we were playing, Kato Kid did his own speed runs, sort of chapter by chapter, and posted those in the comments. But the sort of the so-called official speed runs that they finished Half-Life in like half an hour are fascinating to watch. Now, sometimes they're using tactics or exploits that I don't think are really, you know, kosher or really fair. But, you
agreed.
Know, they use grenade jumps. They use a slave, a Vortigaunt, shooting you to jump at one point. You know, I find that interesting that you could actually, you know, complete the whole game in half an hour when there are several chapters that, you know, normally take a half an hour to play through.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those speedruns are very interesting, and I have a similar opinion to you. As long as they don't cheat, as in they sort of don't jump out of a map and find another way back in, then, you know, I'm impressed with it, as you say, like using, you know, grenades to jump and things like that. For me, that's legitimate.
Yeah.
But jumping out of the map and, you know...
Which they do things. They do on the cliff, if I remember right. They,
yeah,
they
I think
jump
so.
Up and run across the very top of the cliff, which is sort of out of the map. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're still fun. They're still fun to watch, and they only take, you know, half an hour to go through the whole game. So.
Yeah, or 9 minutes if you watch the one for Portal.
Oh, right, yeah.
Speaking of Portal, speedrun is just so fast, so stunning. Like, doof, 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 he's outside the
exactly.
Room. Doof, 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 he's...
Half the time, I don't know what they're doing as well. They do it, and I think, what the heck happened there? So I rewind it, I watch again, and I still don't know what they did. But very clever. So that brings us to near the end. And our last section is, if you were Valve, what would you have done differently? Now, let's just put this into context. We are Valve fans here. We're not complaining that they've done anything wrong, but it's just interesting to say after 14 years and we've got all the experience that we have now, what personally would you do different? Let's start with you, Emo.
I don't really know. The game is so various, so cool. Maybe some more ways to make life easier on the hard places like Nihilans, Tentacles,
okay.
Interloper. And
so it sounds like you're not going to be
more, making Half-Life Source more compatible with original Half-Life to allow mods to be He's the opponent,
No, that's a little bit
Orange
different.
in the
That's
Half-Life
talking
source.
about the technicalities. I'm just talking about the original game. You would make the hard setting a little bit easier. Is that right? Have I understood you?
Well, not right, just add more ways for tactics, or maybe
Oh,
just, I
okay.
don't know, maybe they are actually there, I just don't notice them. Maybe I just need to just play the game with more attention.
Maybe. Okay. Don, what would you change?
No, I think I would agree with Emo. I mean, it's really, if anything, it's you don't want to mess with, what is maybe not a perfect game, but a very enjoyable game, high quality game. It would just be small tweaks for me. I would allow some, the boss battles especially bother me a little bit. I would spin those a little bit and maybe make something more like, I think Valve's other games, especially the Left 4 Dead games, get the boss sequences or what they call crescendo events right, in that they're more intense versions of normal combat, but they're not necessarily totally changing your tactics, or you can only shoot the Gonark when it's stationary, sort of thing. It's which I found to be sort of contrived. So it would just be little tweaks. I would tighten up on a rail. I would, change land decor a little bit to remove the trial and error teleporter
Oh,
gameplay.
yeah.
Otherwise, which was a very high quality, enjoyable level, I would change or eliminate residue processing. But that's just me.
Okay,
But it's
fair
really
enough.
just small tweaks. I wouldn't mess with one of the best games of all time.
Okay. I would shorten the Zen levels in general. I would probably put the final battle. No, probably I wouldn't. Maybe I'd take away where he teleported you all of the time. I think maybe I'd have built in little areas that you go higher and higher and higher as you destroy those crystals that obviously give him or her or it power. But instead of being teleported back to the same place each time, I think I'd build in some kind of little areas where I could replenish my health and those kind of things.
Yeah,
But it's.
I think that's sort of in line with what Emo was saying too. Allow for a little more tactics in that battle rather than
True.
just being teleported, and then you have to, the first teleporter is the
Stock
worst because
up.
you have to jump all the way to the top again,
Yeah, it
which we
is.
just did in Interloper, and I thought it was fine, but I don't like doing it in Iron
Yeah,
Man.
I didn't. And if you're fully charged up and you've got lots of ammo, you don't actually get that much benefit from that level anyway.
Right.
Right.
Now the
Maybe
second
you.
the other teleporters you do, the third teleporter especially, there's a ton of stuff there.
Yeah, there is, but it's the same as the second and the third and the fourth. And that was a shame. I think the only serious thing I would change is the encounters with the gargantuan, because out of all of the enemies, he's the one that scared me is not the right word, but he's the one that scared me the most. And I think that I would be building that up. I would delay the actual fight of him until a little bit later, but I would glimpse him and I would, just build it up much more. And I think I would take out him from the couple of Zen levels, the one we just mentioned where you replenish your health. I would take him out from the other level where we were talking about, coming through the little walkway.
In Interloper, yeah.
Yeah, I think I would only want to fight him once, but it's been really built up to this. Okay, I've managed to evade him for so long now. I'm stuck. I can't get out of it. This is the time. And for me, we saw him too many times as well. That was my basic complaint. But you're right. It's almost a perfect game, and anything else is just a tweak. It's not a change. So, all right. So that's it. We finished this particular podcast. We've got Opposing Force next. And we're not gonna obviously talk about Opposing Force, but just tell me, how many times have you played Opposing Force, Emo?
One, two, or three.
Okay, once or three. Okay. And Don?
Probably about six or so. Not that
In single figures, shock,
many.
horror. Okay, well, I'm still on the single one, so that will be interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I would like to thank you both for your participation in the Tree event, for all of the reviews and the interesting comments. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And for thank your you participation. No, you're most welcome. These events are turning out to be like the best part of the year for me. Last year's 100 Summer Days of Nostalgia was great fun. And although the Tree event is taking much longer than I expected, it's still turning out to be a really interesting time for me. So you're welcome. Thank you for being part of this podcast.
Thank you, Phil.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. And any final words to the listeners, Emo?
Half-Life okay. still surprises you with all this time, and that's great.
Okay, yeah, Half-Life still surprises you, and that's great. You're right. Don,, anything?
Mine would be listen to the music of Half-Life.
I've noticed you posted videos of the music itself a few times.
It's quite intriguing to listen to it on its own. I especially like the more atmospheric tracks over the upbeat ones, but it's quite a genius addition to the game. It would not be the same without it.
So. No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. You're right. And I think my final words would be: take your time. Don't rush through. You know, go back, and once you've killed whatever you need to kill, explore, and think of it as a journey, not a destination.
And find the right mood. So. Really feel Half-Life atmosphere to a full extent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. So thank you, Don. Thank you, Emo. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, players. Keep playing Half-Life and its mods, and we'll be back for the keep Opposing reviewing. Force podcast. I'm sorry, Emo?
I said keep reviewing.
Yes, and keep reviewing too. You're quite right. So thank you, and goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
Remember, finishing Half-Life is just the beginning.